You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm happy to be here today with another edition of our show. I am joined today by Dr. Matt Johnson. Dr. Johnson, how are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there.
Just another day in paradise, right?
Yeah, you know, nothing witty today.
Well, there's a lot to go on and discuss and discover, so hopefully we can start digging into that. Something that I think is really interesting, of course, is the subject of fake news. So we're discussing the, the principles of fake news and, basically the media says anything that counteracts their anti-white, anti-Christian, anti-national narrative is fake news. Well, the funny thing has happened where so many people are looking, in a very deep way at news in a much more, critical fashion. And realizing that the mainstream news is all nonsense. So people said, hey, let's turn to things like Snopes. Snopes.com, of course, was used to answer all sort of questions like, did that one time, did they find like a chicken foot in a McDonald's chicken nugget? Like, yes or no? You know, they that's what it was begun. But now things have gotten increasingly politicized. So they a recent thing just came out about the about during Donald Trump's speech that he gave in front of Congress, of course, and they said that the question was, did top Democrats not stand as long for as the Republicans for the Gold Star Widow? Of course, got a 2-minute standing ovation, and Snopes, of course, is very political, and decided to cover and say that, oh no, that's just fake news. Well, the thing is, when everything's live streamed, there's actual evidence. So they got caught in a lie to try and make the Democrats look better. But I want to talk about this principle, the idea of fake news, and how more and more the media is being exposed. I mean, time after time, about when they lie, even about something big or about something simple, that we discover them, and more people are losing trust with the mainstream media.
The press has been the enemy of tradition for several centuries now. It's always in the hands of the Jews or those close to them, and even in empires like the Romanov Empire, somehow Jews were able to still gain control of the main newspapers. And journalism is not there to especially years ago, but it's going back to that now. It's not there to report facts. It's there to support the regime. It's there to support power. There is something to be said for state media, because there's nothing independent about a corporate oligarchical media. There's nothing independent about it whatsoever. I would believe that states have just as much reason to lie or to tell the truth as a private corporation does. But this has been our enemy from day one.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about that, because it's part of this narrative, right, about the fake news. About Putin. Oh, the Russia Today and Sputnik are putting out nothing but lies, nothing but propaganda. No, we must counteract this. We must, try and reduce in terms of the algorithms how much these websites show up on Facebook or on Google and different news things and things like that to try and keep them out. But no, Putin. He's got this vast media empire in which he's brainwashing the West, in which all this state media. Well, first of all, I think the evidence is very clear. It's nowhere near that. But second of all, when you compare, for instance, the Jewish oligarchical system, everything from trying to destabilize regimes around the planet to promoting homosexuality. I mean, we can't even have Beauty and the Beast without them promoting homosexuality to children now. Every degeneracy of Western civilization is sponsored by the media, where, by golly, is it not clear that the bankers and the corporations are more powerful than the civil government? So what would your comparison be, given your experience, your knowledge about Russia and Eastern Europe, between the role of Putin's government with things like Russia Today versus the Jewish oligarchs' control over Western media?
Well, one thing people don't understand is that even in those newspapers and news outlets that are state-owned or at least partly state-owned, they can be very, very critical of the government. And there's no reason to believe that they're not allowed to be. State media has been very critical of Putin in Russia. State media has been very critical of Assad in certain areas in Syria. State media does not mean it's simply a propaganda arm of the state. They're quite vigorous in their criticism of them because, you know, part of the building of state media is that these reporters and journalists have certain guarantees that they could do as they please. You won't be able to get good reporters otherwise. So, you know, 100 years ago, as I said the last time I was on, the Jewish press in the late Tsarist Empire was doing the exact same thing. It was an absolute disaster. The state did not own media back then. The Jewish media was violently anti-royal, anti-Christian, everything. They would lie about candidates. They would lie about platforms just to get votes for someone. And whenever that, you know, they made stuff up, the Rasputin case and the Alexandra case and all that was simply concocted. And to this day, the professor is spouting this stuff as fact. So it's getting worse now. It's at the level now it was 100 years ago in Russia. There's not even a pretext of telling the truth anymore.
Well, exactly. I mean, they've really just kind of thrown all that away. Now, something I think is really interesting in addition, so we're talking about truth, right? We're always searching for truth. That's the mission of us on the right, is to search for truth, to stand for truth, and fight for truth. But some more truth has been revealed. It looks like the CIA has experienced another leak. We're talking about a tremendous amount of materials has been leaked about the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, codenamed Vault 7, and it's the largest ever publication of confidential documents on the agency. We've got almost 9,000 high-security networks situated inside the Center for Cyber Intelligence in Langley, Virginia, related documents. So it includes a lot of things, like the CIA targeting French political parties and candidates in lead-up to the 2012 presidential election, their hacking that they do, and the CIA's global covert hacking program for around the world with malware and other programs like that, wars against other governments, and being able to target iPhones, Androids, smart TVs, basically anything, to be able to tap it, to be able to use. They don't have to plant a wire anymore. They can turn on any electronic that you have and be able to tap your resources. And, a whole lot of things going on here about revealing that the U.S. consulate also in Frankfurt is a covert CIA hacker base. Very, very interesting stuff. And the CIA is basically doing a lot of stuff, it looks like, without the actual approval of the government. So what do you think, Dr. Johnson, as we're of course driving towards, all sorts of stress between the West, between Russia and the Eastern governments, but also between our duly elected officials and the shadow government, the agency and other organizations that aren't elected, aren't accountable to the people, but have their own geopolitical narratives. It looks like they're really going full bore, and this reveal, I think, might be damaging to them to really show people. I mean, no one's been able to go through all the things yet, so who knows what other nuggets are hidden waiting to come out. So what are your thoughts on these CIA leaks?
Well, the left is starting to realize that they are the establishment, and the CIA has had their back all along, as has the FBI and everybody else. And so all of a sudden, after decades of defaming the CIA when they were allegedly at war with Marxism, now they are fanatically in support of it because they declared war on Trump. Trump came into office, and he was going to purge the government of corruption. He is not really a member of the party. He was self-financed. He doesn't owe anyone anything. He had potential, still does, I guess, to be the Putin of the West. But at the same time, he's going up against some of the most powerful organizations in the world. But one thing that Putin is doing, that Trump is doing, is that he's forcing the shadow regime to not be so shadowy anymore. That they're being forced to simply lash out and come out of hiding, and that's something new. It's sort of like when Putin attacked the Syrian jihadists and forced the U.S. to condemn it. thereby proving that the West was supporting ISIS. It's a similar thing here. And actually, I think one possible reason he brought this mad dog jerk off on General as Secretary of Defense is that he needs a tough guy to go up against the CIA. He doesn't want to do that alone. And that might be the one thing that excuses that ridiculous appointment. And having military men in his cabinet might make sense in that respect.
Well, you know, there's so much going on here, you know, in regards to understanding the real power structure that's going on. Now, I was reading an interesting article today talking about, yesterday, talking about the NATO buildup that's going on in Estonia. Of course, they're upping their drills that they're doing for their reservists and things like that. And into Eastern Europe, there's more requests for more military. And North Korea, of course. Now, South Korea is having a new missile base deployed, a new missile system to try and keep them safe against the evil North Koreans and all that good stuff. I mean, the empire seems to be beating the war drum still, but that isn't what... I mean, Donald Trump said that he wanted to talk to North Korea and hasn't seemed to pivot away from that. He said that we want to reduce NATO and things like that. So how much of this do you think is really under his control? How much do you think is happening just, in general, rolling forward?
Well, the buildup against Russia has been going on since, you know, the late 90s. More recently, this is something that has momentum. I've yet to hear a coherent reason why you need millions of Americans to die to contain Russia that doesn't threaten anyone, that doesn't have the capacity, that doesn't have the resources to threaten anyone. So which means that they're going to have to create, if they're going to do this, they're going to have to create a false flag. You know, painting F-16s in Russian colors, whatever they need to do. You will see a burning building and a perfectly intact Russian passport on it saying, "I hate Jews." It's going to be their big false flag. Everyone's going to believe it, and that's going to be the cause for war, a war that the Americans can't win. And this is something I was on Rick Adams' show the other day, and I said, "Rick, this doesn't make sense. They can't defeat Russia just one-on-one, let alone Russia, China, Iran, India, which the SCO would call for in case of combat. And you know, let alone North Korea and a million other countries that would come in support of Russia and the anti-imperialist idea. So I don't understand. Rick Adams' answer to me was well, their purpose isn't to win a war. Their purpose is to destroy the U.S., to destroy any national political institution, create something brand new on a global level, to weaken Russia enough. And also to destroy America at the same time, and to create this new order, which I actually, you know, kind of a simple thing that I hadn't thought of before, and I think he's right.
Well, you know, I mean, with that, to be able to see that the system is in damage control mode, they're really trying to figure out exactly what they want to do, and they've got to find a way to derail the current train of events. Now, what do you think is going on with Iran and North Korea? Now, both of them have been doing more and more missile tests, and I kind of just want to tell them to chill out. I mean, I don't have anything deeper to say on that, other than things are changing, guys. Please chill out. But they are seem to be having provocations, which is playing in the hands of the globalists to ramp up tensions in the regions and to be able to increase the specter of American military involvement on the Korean Peninsula and in the Middle East. So what do you think on that? Why are they doing it, and what's the proper response to be able to handle these additional missile tests?
Well, you see, Johnson's Law is actually applicable here. I have no idea to what extent these tests are real, how significant they are, whether they're provocations or not, whether they've been painted that way in the press. It's so easy to use incendiary language in dealing with countries that most Americans don't understand or trust in the first place. So the U.S., of course, NATO does tests with missiles all the time, and it doesn't make front page news. But when a rogue state does it, it becomes a big problem. So I'm not sure if these are provocations or if these are just being treated as such.
Right, and no one can really know exactly what's going on, you know, on the flip side about what the West is doing to be able to be working to destabilize the region, because, of course, countries aren't doing tests and stuff like that unless they feel threatened, and I would say overwhelmingly all of cases. So what are we doing that, of course, our media is complicit in not telling us what our system is doing. I think that would be a very interesting thing for us to find out. Now, Republicans have put forward a change to repeal and replace Obamacare. I want to get your knee-jerk thoughts on that, because I'm really not a big fan of what they're putting forward. They're getting rid of a lot of the taxes on the multinational corporations and rich. I like, for the sake of a lot of working class families who couldn't afford insurance for one reason or another, they fell through the fell through the cracks, that they're not going to be penalized in their taxes. But this really just seems like it's a massive blow to the average working class family. I mean, I'm not going to say the Affordable Care Act was the best. It wasn't exactly what we needed. But I genuinely was a fan of the Affordable Care Act for what it did for families and communities. So, Dr. Johnson, what are your thoughts on this new bill that's been put forward?
I don't disagree with you. I've been dreading this, and I know that they've been Republicans and most Democrats have been trying to put together a package to just completely oligarchize the healthcare industry even more than it is. For me personally, Obamacare has helped me quite a bit. And I've been open about that. I'm not pretty sure if I could, just being self-employed, I'm not sure I could afford healthcare coverage, even just for me personally, without the subsidy that most of us get. Without Obamacare, I'm in trouble, and I think I'm far from the only one that's in that case. The Republicans simply want to corporatize and privatize everything, and hand it over to their campaign donors. And of course, everything goes through the Lehman Brothers and the major financial institutions. So this isn't really the Republicans. This is the oligarchs who are, they see the hypochondriac America who's willing to spend themselves into poverty for healthcare. They overuse the healthcare system, and they need to get in on this.
So, I mean, I think this just goes to show that Trump is not one of us, because, maybe he's making a trade here. But the system is not good for the majority of Americans. I mean, the idea of having health care that isn't guaranteed to the working class, of course, they're going to cut the Medicaid expansion in 2020. They're going to cut those funds off, which means that millions of people are going to lose their Medicaid probably by 2020. Lots of families not able to afford being able to get coverage. And it just increases the power structure of the fact that we put profits ahead of people when it comes to healthcare in America, which is why a surgery costs five times as much here as it does overseas in England or Germany or France or a place like that. They've got as good or superior healthcare systems than we do, but it's not bankrupting the people, and they're able to have basic levels of treatment and being able to have specialists to go see and things like that. So, I mean, it really just seems like this is a massive slap in the face to every really working class person that voted for Trump.
I just had a routine procedure done, and I couldn't have been more impressed with how the hospital handled things. I mean, I live right across the street from it. They have the highest tech everything. It went extremely smoothly. It was a well oiled machine with no problems whatsoever. And a lot of that had to do with these continued developments in technology that are worthwhile. My big fear with abandoning the current model is that that's going to go away. There are problems in Europe. I'm not justifying the American system at all, but there are problems in Europe with extremely high taxation and debt and long waiting lists. Now, there are waiting lists in America too, but there is a problem, say in Great Britain, for people dying there on when you artificially lower the price of something, you're going to have more people need it, want it, and there's going to be shortages. And so this is what I'm concerned with. I don't want to romanticize either system. But I'm not so certain I'm a big fan of single payer either. But if there's going to be an emergency or a serious crisis, financial crisis, then I don't think the state's going to have any choice.
Well, and I mean, the thing is, in a homogenous society where health and virtue is actually promoted, being able to have universal health care for one in-group, for one extended family that has understanding of responsibility, that it's their neighbor that's paying for their health care if they get really sick or something like that, I mean, it's like the old Grange societies and whatnot. And they still exist today, these societies that help pay their fellow members' medical bills and things like that. That in a homogenous society, this wouldn't be a problem. The idea of not having a single-payer system in a homogenous society, I think it would be ridiculous. But in a multicultural society, it's a nightmare. I mean, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't when it comes to dealing with Americanism. And there's nothing you can do to make the system happy. Now, speaking of that, Dr. Johnson, we were talking a little last night about this. The Supreme Court ruled in something that has not been reported very much, but the Supreme Court has ruled that courts must make an exception to the usual rule that jury deliberations are secret when evidence emerges that those discussions were marred by racial or ethnic bias. Can you tell us why this is important and what this means for the judiciary here in the United States?
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up. I wouldn't have heard of it at all if it wasn't for you. I was up all night. I finished a paper for the American Free Press. I think this is huge. Essentially, what's happening is if there's a report, if there's a conviction in a criminal case and there's a report that a juror had something less than flattering to say about an ethnic group, and that had something to do with the ethnic group of the person that was just convicted, you're going to get a new trial. What's going to have to happen is that jury deliberations are going to have to be under a court reporter, and the defense attorneys are going to be able to go through it, trying to find any bias at all. Now, this particular case, the bias is actually true. The comment was that a Mexican males have this machismo issue, and that leads to greater violence against women. That happens to be true. And I cited a million sources saying that that's true. But in the court's decision, the truth of the matter was irrelevant. This is a dangerous way to divide Americans. And the guy's going to get a new trial. Who was convicted, actually a very easy case. There was no question the guy's guilty. And now he's going to get a new trial for sexual assault of several teenage girls back in 2007. So even truth is no defense here. And juries are going to be really told what to do and what to say. And if there's any non-PC statement, they're going to get a new trial, or there's going to be an acquittal or a hung jury or something like this. And this is a way, as you know, gang violence increases, when gang violence is almost 90% non-white, or probably more than that, this is going to be a way that the system, who's been financing these gangs for years and years and years, gets to protect its investment and keep its footholders from being prosecuted. This could be huge, not just for law and order, which is already breaking down, but also for the sake of the drug war and everything else. They're protecting their investment. They're protecting their foot soldiers. These gangs are very important to the regime.
I mean, it's a pretty ridiculous thing to just imagine that, if you're just like, yep, inner city black gangbangers, they sure do things like this that, it doesn't matter. The guy could have, raped and murdered somebody. Nope, throw that conviction out. It doesn't even matter. I mean, it's an absolutely ludicrous situation. It's absolutely out of control. Now, speaking of out of control, we saw, of course, what happened in Berkeley. And Base Stickman has now been bailed out. But, of course, he's facing six felonies for hitting Antifa that were attacking him and other Trump supporters. The Antifa came forward with weapons, and he had a it wasn't much bigger than a dowel rod, a pretty small stick, all things considered. And he thwacked a couple of the Antifa to get them away, and he did, and wasn't that big of a deal. But now they've charged him with rioting and other felonies. And this is not a white nationalist. The dude's married to an Asian woman, and he's alt-right, it seems. But God bless him for his courage. But Dr. Johnson, I want to talk about this. You had Antifa that were rampaging in Berkeley. First of all, when Milo Yiannopoulos came, literally burning things down. But here at this Trump rally, they were attacking people left and right. They were macing old people. The footage and videos came out of that, doing all sorts of crazy things. And a dude thwacks one of them in the head, and that's enough to charge him with a crime? And not just a crime, but six felonies? It's absolutely out of control. So more on the absolutely out of control wagon is this case. So I want to know your thoughts on this.
Well, it's the same thing. The regime is protecting its investments, whether it be Hispanic gangbangers or the Antifa people who are paid to do this, who are given social acceptance and God knows what else, drugs especially, at least years ago. for this violence. They don't want them going to jail, especially since and they'd rather put us there. If you know, rioting and you know the Antifa have been involved in every conceivable kind of crime. If the law was actually brought to bear on them, they wouldn't exist anymore. So clearly they're being protected by somebody. That's beyond doubt. Or you'd have to say this is a huge coincidence. These people never never get in any trouble. These groups are coordinated. They're well financed, and the problem in analyzing them is that the foundations give to other foundations, that give to other foundations, that give to the La Raza Council of Chicago, that give to they launder their money. So it's really hard to find where their financing comes from. But whether it be with street gangs or Antifa, which are really the same thing, these are elite financed and they're elite protected. And now this thing, I've seen the video, it's on videotape. A jury is going to have to say, well, that wasn't self-defense. And all 12 are going to have to agree on it. So I don't see that happening.
Well, I mean, the entire system is built upon, I mean, if the left didn't have the state protecting them or the courts, this would be over in a day. I mean, if we just had like a 12-hour period, like the Purge, it'd be game over, you know, that they have to be defended by the state financially in terms of the court system. You know, they're all big and bad and they hate the state until they're the first ones to go cry to the police to beg them to go after us after they've been a bunch of violent thugs and criminals. I mean, the radical left, they are the boot boys of the Jewish oligarchs. There's no question about that. They're enforcing the standard policies of Angela Merkel and the American, you know, elite. And when you just go to any college campus, they're upholding the societal norms. They're not rebels in any capacity, but they are the infantry. I mean, we're talking about military stuff. They are the infantry of the system, and they are thrown like conscripts at people like us, at Trump supporters, at the institutions, to block roads, and how many of them have gotten run down and things like that after they try and drag people out of their cars and things like that. So, I mean, they really are a massive force of conscripts for the system, but they definitely are being defended by the system. In terms of the court, in terms of the state, in terms of financially, in terms of the media, they are part of the state. They're essentially a fourth wing of government, these radical leftist protesters, agitators, and troublemakers.
You're absolutely right. They destroyed Operation Rescue, if you remember the pro-life group in the late 80s that tried to shut down the abortion clinics. It was a year or two, and there was no more Operation Rescue because all these guys went to jail. They use a RICO Act on them and everything. So clearly, if the state wants it to happen, it's going to happen. These are infantry. These are – and the state's going to take care of them. But in this particular case, the jury, you know, assuming there's no pressure on them – I don't know who would put pressure on them. We've seen the videotape. I'm not sure how they could see anything different than we do. They see who started this. I watched the whole video. You've watched the video. I don't know how this guy can be. What the DA is going to do? The DA has seen the video. Unless this is a purely political matter, don't you dare attack our people, or this is what's going to happen to you. They may end up dropping it, but the video is clear self-defense.
Yeah, well, I mean, that sort of thing. Up is down, black is white. You know, the sky is green and the grass is blue. Sort of thing is what the left tries to do to redefine reality in accordance with their principles, but. They can't throw everything down the Orwellian memory hole as long as we have the internet. Although another scary thing, net neutrality, that it looks like Trump's new pick wants to do away with that, which would allow, there's no longer going to be an equal playing field. I'll use that as my final thought for the day. What do you think about the Trump administration? You know, I don't think it's an issue he really cares about, but the Republicans do. So, you know, going ahead and getting rid of net neutrality.
Yeah, I mean, without the web, I can't imagine what we'd be doing. We couldn't have exposed any of this stuff. The regime is losing in different parts of the world largely because of the web. If increasing and there's plenty of reasons for them to clamp down on the web. They could use warfare. They could use anything. But that's gonna hurt us. This is the web. We are a web-based group, at least informationally, and the system hates it. I think the system really regrets. Putting the web out.
I agree with you. So we're just going to keep up the fight. Lots of exciting things going on. A lot of different ground to cover. But we just keep battling on. So, Dr. Johnson, can you give us a final thought to carry us out for the day?
There's reason to be optimistic still. We're going to suffer, and it's going to suck. But there are reasons to be optimistic. The left is out in the open with this violence now. Most people see what they are. And that's a brand new thing that's going to work in our favor.
I agree. We'll keep carrying on. So, comrades, thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Johnson, for being here with me today. Thank you guys for listening. I'll look forward to being back tomorrow with another edition of The Daily Traditionalist. I hope you all have a great day, and hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.